Good morning, Steve Dales, Pet World on WGN Radio. Wayne Pacelli is the CEO, president of Animal Wellness Action, as well as the Center for a Humane Economy and founder of those organizations as well. Boy, you've been some busy guy there, Wayne.
Well, I'm trying to model your behavior, Steve, on animal welfare.
No. I mean, what you're doing is incredible, and I'd like to talk to you. I want to talk about the beagles at Rigland Farms in Wisconsin. I want to talk about news, actually, regarding horse slaughter and an amendment that may boost the crackdown on animal fighting. But before we get to all of that, I want to talk to you about something that has not gotten a lot of press, the M44 cyanide injectors that the Trump administration has now said, oh, come back, bring them back. Explain what these are.
Yes, Steve, this is a distressing development from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which runs a misnamed sort of program called the Wildlife Services. It used to be called Animal Damage Control. It was established in 1931. The federal government spends tens of millions of dollars of our tax dollars killing predators to basically allow cattle and sheep to graze on our public lands and then to have other resource extraction groups not have to deal with any interactions with wildlife. So this agency kills 100,000 coyotes a year. It kills wolves. It kills bears. It kills countless bird species, millions of individual birds. And they have had their tools restricted a little bit by some of the states. Some of the states have banned the use of steel jaw leg hole traps, as well as some of the poisons that they used. And one of the poisons used is sodium cyanide, and it's put into this canister called an M44. It's basically buried in the ground, and it's a spring-loaded explosive device. So if an animal tugs at it, it has a mini explosion, and sodium cyanide gets expelled into the air and will poison and kill the coyote, but it could be a dog, it could be a person. These are indiscriminate, just like I call steel-jawed leg hole traps landmines for wildlife. These are explosive poison grenades that are put out on our public lands, and any animal unfortunate enough to trigger the device could be victimized. The problem is, not only is it cruel, it's indiscriminate. So the Trump team, I don't know who within the USDA, you know, domain, said, oh, let's put these poison grenades back out onto our public lands. It's just colossally stupid. We thought we were done with it. The Biden administration stopped it on our federal lands, and we have banned it by state ballot measure in California and Washington, and then Oregon lawmakers stopped it. So it's really the interior West state, Steve, that allow this.
How about the Midwest where we are, and how about the Northeast or Eastern or Southeastern part of the U.S.?
No, it's pretty much just on the public lands in the West, and it's on Bureau of Land Management lands and maybe some Forest Service lands, and it's fortunately not in the Midwest, not in the East, but it's bad enough that it's on millions and millions of acres between the Pacific Coast states and the Midwest.
And haven't owned dogs encountered these over the years, as well as potentially people, and that's one reason why they were banned in the first place. One of the reasons.
Yes, there was a young man, you know, a boy of 16 or so. He was walking his dog on public lands, and they triggered the device. They both got poisoned. The boy survived. The dog didn't. There are other cases very similar to that. And then we just don't know what the actual number of dogs and many other non-targeted wildlife killed by this indiscriminate method. It doesn't make sense for us to have this on our public lands. Public lands for all the people, not for, you know, ranchers to have the federal government, you know, do the worst things imaginable to our native wildlife to benefit them.
So what are you doing, you meaning Animal Wellness Action and Center for a Humane Economy? Already you've done something. I mean, and by the way, you can sign up for these newsletters that I get to on the websites of these respective organizations. But what can you do legislatively to reverse it? Or Is it just a matter of politics without thinking? Biden did it, and therefore we don't like it.
I think you're right. I think that this falls into that bucket. Biden did it. We're going to unwind what he did. There's a bill that's been introduced by Congressman Jared Huffman. He's a Democrat. He's the top Democrat on the Natural Resources Committee where this bill would go. If the Democrats take the House in the November elections, he'd be the chair of the committee. So I think the bill could move in that space. But, you know, I just don't feel very optimistic that the Trump team at the USDA is going to reverse course on this. I'm not sure what our litigation options are. Our legal team is looking at it. So I think we just have to, you know, raise a stink and just continue to focus on it. Maybe some sane person will decide, no, we don't want to have poison grenades on our public lands.
Now, you said the initial purpose of this was to control wolves and coyotes, or coyotes. Why?
Well, because the ranchers think they've got some sort of God-given right to graze on our public lands. They already get below-market grazing fees from our federal government, and they just detest coyotes and wolves. And they think that these animals are a threat, even though weather, lightning, and disease, you know, claim 95% of all of the cattle and sheep who die on our public lands. The predation by these mammalian predators is minimal. And we also know that there are ways that are enduring to ward them off, right? Guard dogs are the most effective way to keep coyotes and even wolves away. So, you know, if you're grazing on public lands in a wildlife area or a wilderness area, you're going to have some conflicts with wildlife. The response shouldn't be we're going to, you know, unleash the Marines and explosive grenades and landmines and kill these animals on our public lands. You know, it's maybe a different matter in terms of, you know, what the latitude of the ranchers would be on their own private land, but why should they be allowed to do this on our federal lands? They just shouldn't.
And you said birds. I mean, why? I assume you're not talking sparrows, but why birds?
Yeah. Well, there are many different species who are targeted. There, in the east, there are roosts of birds during the winter that, you know, make a mess in terms of their fecal matter. And Wildlife Services has been known to spray a substance that destroys the insulating properties of their feathers during the middle of winter, so they all die from the cold. The USDA's Wildlife Services also does kill birds at airports, as there are strikes between birds and aircraft. So that's been something that they actually tout, and they're very proud of that work. But we have lots of conflicts with species, right? Because we have 340 million people in this country, and for many years we didn't have to deal with wildlife because we had, you know, wiped wild animals out in so many parts of the country.
Wayne, one of those 340 million now has to take a commercial break. But
yes, sir.
When we come back, I do want to talk about beagles and Rigland Farms and the latest on using animals for scientific purposes to prepare drugs. We'll talk about that when we come back on WGN. Back with Wayne Pacelli, who's been in the news, our friend here for many years, again, because he's been in the national news before, CEO, president of Animal Wellness Action, Center for a Humane Economy. In the news for what? Well, you may have heard about all those beagles at Ridgeland Farms, just outside Madison, Wisconsin. 1,600, I think, was the final number, or about that, when all was said and done, that now have homes or are about to have homes, Paws Chicago, among those who are then adopting these beagles out or who have done so at this point. Let's back up a little bit. Let's explain what all of these beagles were doing there in the first place, Wayne, and then how you came in.
See, this Ridgeland Farms operation, as you know, right outside of Madison, Wisconsin, is a laboratory animal supplier. They feed Merck, AstraZeneca, academic labs, contract labs, when they want to do toxicology tests or drug tests on animals, often painful, invasive testing on these submissive, docile beagles who were used precisely because of those behavioral characteristics. You can do just about anything to them, and they won't bark, and they won't bite. There have been big protests at Richland Farms. There's been really concern about the mistreatment of animals. There were a number of violations under state law that were determined by inspectors. Even some federal government inspectors found problems. And we decided after some of the protests, or as the protests were going on, to start talking to Richland Farms. And they were tough negotiations, but they were productive. And at the end of the day, we purchased 1,635 dogs. We're continuing to have discussions with them. That's 1,635 out of about 2,000, so more than three-quarters of all the dogs. And we have worked with our partners at Big Dog Ranch Rescue and Beagle Freedom Project to place them all over the country, including in Chicagoland. We want to get every last dog. This model of using beagles in testing is broken. It's wrong. It doesn't work scientifically. We can do much better.
All right, so let's talk about what these dogs, what life was like for them. You've said before that when you literally, in some cases, you were lucky enough to take some of the dogs out, and this is the first time they touched grass. This is the first time they saw the sunshine. This is the first time, no matter, fill in the blank, anything. And once adopted, first time they've been asked to be house trained. First time they've seen stairs to go up and down stairs. I mean, the list goes on and on. But moreover, they were bred, and the females were bred and bred over and over again, more than what is quote unquote responsible. I don't know what kind of veterinary care they received or didn't receive, but this is, never mind the fact that, and we'll talk about this as well, I'm sure, is that I don't know that we need to do this anymore with animals. I'm concerned also about the conditions the animals were in. There were two to a cage, and they were cages, and they were not taken for daily walks. I mean, that list, Wayne, goes on and on.
Well, 2,000 dogs, how could you, with a small labor force, how could you give them any individual attention? I mean, I walked into one of the 30 or 40 buildings that were each full of beagles, two to a cage, about 3 foot high, so the waste would fall out of the bottom of the metal cage and the slats, side by side by side. I mean, it was like an indoor puppy mill, you know. And when I walked in the first time with a few others to grab them and pull them out and bring them into the rescue vehicles, I mean, you could barely hear yourself think. They were jumping at the side of the cages where we were, and they were barking. But then when we opened the cage door, they moved to the back of the cage as far as they could get away from us. They were scared. And then you reach in and grab them, and they turn very submissive. You put them in your arms, walk them out, and they don't do anything except just kind of be a wet noodle, if you will. And as you say, Steve, you know so much about pet care and socialization. I mean, these animals start off this journey into people's homes and into family life, you know, without any real experience with people in terms of interaction. But it was amazing how quickly they learned. And when we did put them in a grass-fenced yard after we got them out, they really reverted quickly to their beagle behavior. They were sniffing around, and they were playing with each other, and they felt the sunshine, and they were, you know, just taking in all the smells that beagles are so excellent at doing. And I feel like so many of them are on a great path, but it's going to take a little time. And the new keepers of these animals, their new humans, are going to have to be patient with them, and they're going to have to socialize them, just like, you know, you have to socialize a feral cat. It just takes a while.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about the feral cat part. That's another discussion. But
yeah.
But, I believe most of those cats should just be, yes, spay neutered, but just left alone outside. And
yes, right.
Yeah, I would assume you'd agree. Yes. All right. But,
yes, I do.
Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. And these poor dogs did, you know, dogs are emotional beings just like we are. And my goodness, what they suffered through. But the good thing is that they're more resilient, I would suggest, than people are. And these beagles will ultimately thrive. And supply and demand, are you surprised at the number of organizations, individuals from all over the U.S. and, for all I know, Wayne, all over the world that said, I want one of those dogs?
No, I wasn't surprised at all, Steve. You and I know that our passions for animals run deep in this country. And when people understood that these animals were destined for labs and they could participate in the end process of being rerouted to loving homes, I mean, people and organizations just stepped up in a huge way. I'm so proud of America for responding in this way.
Now, it's not only beagles. On occasion, some facilities have other types of dogs, but they also have various rodents. They also sometimes still have primates. Why don't we need to do that anymore? I don't want you to answer yet. You will answer, however, because I know there is an answer. And an answer, by the way, that can impact all of us that do say, and rightly so, we're paying too much money for our pharmaceuticals. Well, this can actually bring the prices down? How can that be? Wayne Pacelli knows, and he will explain when we come back on WGN. Center for a Humane Economy and Animal Wellness Action. He's the president. He's the founder, Wayne Pacelli. Wow, you must feel personally really good about this. I mean, you had all these people protesting, and that started the ball rolling. I'm talking about Ridgeland Farms up near Madison, Wisconsin. And then you got involved and negotiated that so far, I hope there are more, about 1,600 beagles are now released from this animal laboratory facility. I don't even know. You'll tell me what to call this facility. Wayne, why don't we need these facilities?
You know, Steve, animal testing was really developed, more than a century ago. And in the 1930s, the United States, after there were some drugs that were developed that hurt people, some of the regulators said, oh, we're going to now require animal testing because the animals can be a proxy for human beings and we can see if the drugs cause problems in them before we put it in people, and we can save people. A worthy notion to save people, but it turns out that this use of animals as models has not been very effective. The data show over the decades that in 90%+ of the cases where drugs, like a cancer drug, a pain drug, an Alzheimer's drug, when they pass muster when it comes to safety testing in animals, they failed in human clinical trials. A 90% failure rate is not good. And now we look at what we humans are capable of in terms of innovation and creativity, in ingenuity, and we have new methods that are much faster, much cheaper, much more predictive of the human reaction to drugs because we're basing these new methods on human biology. We have organs on a chip. We can create a microphysiological system with human cells to mimic the actions of a lung in a system or a kidney or some other critical organ that is used in drug testing. But they're human cells, and this has proved to be much more predictive, much cheaper, and much more reliable. So there are many different things. There's AI, there's computational toxicology, there are many other strategies. When we passed the FDA Modernization Act 2.0 in Congress in 2022, the Congress said, we've got to lift this animal testing mandate. We've got to embrace these alternatives. That's why Ridgeland Farms has been open to negotiations with us, because they can see that their old model of breeding beagles and selling them to labs doesn't really have a future. So we've got those animals out of that facility. We're going to get the last of them, I hope, in the coming weeks. And then we can embark on scientific protocols that are going to be better for people and leave the animals out of the equation.
So Ridgeland Labs received tons of national attention, even international attention, for what happened here. Is that going to impact lawmakers, do you think, to say, all right, we just don't need to do this anymore?
Yes, I think now we've got incredible momentum in Congress to stop federal financing through the National Institutes of Health, the biggest health-related grant maker in the world, to say we're not going to finance research protocols that involve dogs or cats. I think it, over time, is going to include primates, and I think it's going to include other animals. But I think we're going to start with the dogs and the cats. We used, in the last year for which the U.S. Department of Agriculture keeps records, we used 42,000 dogs, nearly all of them beagles. We used 107,000 primates in tests, and we used millions of other animals. This all has to change. We are not only victimizing the animals, but, Steve, you suggested in the opening, we have drugs that have incredible numbers of side effects. We have expensive drugs. We have a failure to develop cures for many of the things that plague our family members and people in our communities. We can do much better. We must do much better. And using the beagles and the primates, you know, which is, again, a 1930s strategy, just isn't going to cut it. What part of our economy uses 1930s strategies? Not telecommunications. We don't use crank phones. We use iPhone 17. If you've got an iPhone 13, you're considered kind of passé in this world. In so many domains in this world, we're using new technology. That's what we've got to embrace here.
So what would be the next step, do you think? Is it legislation to make this happen?
It is. I mean, we're going to pass the FDA Modernization Act 3.0 to accelerate the acceptance of alternatives across the board. But I also think during the annual spending process in the Congress, we want to place a limit. We want to say, National Institutes of Health, if you're going to give out grants to researchers, you've got to have protocols that don't involve the use of dogs and cats. That's going to start us down the path. Congressman Nick Langworthy of New York, a Republican, Mark Pocan, a Democrat of Wisconsin from Dane County, they've been very outspoken. They have already readied amendments on this issue, and we're going to work closely with them in Congress. And, Steve, we want all of your listeners from Chicagoland and beyond to join us in this effort and write to lawmakers. I mean, the only way that Congress responds is when the public demands action. Here we've got a great opportunity for action.
And you can take action, by the way, with Animal Wellness Action, as well as the Center for a Humane Economy. What is the website? Because I know they're interconnected.
Yes, animalwellnessaction.org is our public policy arm. That's the one that does the lobbying and the legislative work. The Center for Humane Economy works with businesses like Ridgeland Farms to change their practices, or it works with, you know, Adidas or Nike to stop sourcing kangaroo skins, or it works with Merck or AstraZeneca to stop using dogs or primates. So both organizations, centerforhumaneeconomy.org and animalwellnessaction.org, are places if you want to help animals take action, and we're taking on the biggest problems that exist for animals and solving these problems.
You've worked with hundreds, many hundreds of public officials over the years. Do you think that it really, when it comes down to it, doesn't matter if they're Democrat, Republican, Independent, that it's all about compassion? And do you think most of these folks want to do the right thing in general, although I understand some issues are pretty complex?
Yes. Well, I think special interests really have a big say in all this. And I think with animal use, many businesses profit from exploiting animals, and that impedes our progress. But I will tell you, Steve, that on this animal testing issue, especially seeing the response of the Ridgeland Farm Beagles, we've seen Democrats and Republicans come together. I haven't gotten one critical comment from anyone that says, oh, you're going too far. People want those animals out of laboratories. They want them out of the laboratory supply companies. They want us to embrace these new strategies because we're smart enough and creative enough as a species not to victimize these incredible animals.
And most scientists that I know would totally agree with what you just said. We just don't need to do that any longer. A boost in the crackdown on animal fighting, and also news about horse slaughter that will make you happy if you're a horse lover. We'll hear that when we come back with Wayne Pacelli on WGN. This man has dedicated his life, really, adult life anyway, to animal welfare. And Wayne, when all is said and done, the difference you have made and continue to make is just astounding. You and I go back together many, many, many years. And I know what you've done, or at least some of it. CEO, president of Animal Wellness Action, Center for a Humane Economy. And you're part of all these questions that I'm asking you, like, horse slaughter, and you actually have news about this.
Yes. Well, Steve, you've been centrally involved in all this work as well, and it's certainly been a team effort, and so many people care about animals. I mean, you and I know that there's a bond that humans have with animals, and one of the species that we have an ages-old bond with is the horse. And no animal played a more important role in settlement of our country and commerce than the horse. And unfortunately, we forget that history and we betray the ages-old bond by treating horses as a potential commodity in the waiting. And we've had this terrible practice, Steve, for decades of horse slaughter for human consumption. Horses are not raised for meat. They are raised for show and companionship and riding and sport, but not for meat. But we have allowed these kill buyers to acquire them, put them on trucks, and send them to slaughter plants. In 2007, one of the last three slaughter plants in DeKalb, Illinois, shut down. There were also two shut down that same year in Texas around Dallas. So domestic slaughter plants were all shuttered in 2007, but in more recent decades, these last two decades, we've been shipping live horses to Mexico and Canada for slaughter. We just learned, because of the New World screwworm, which is a terrible parasite that's a flesh-eating parasite, that because of the concern for the well-being of cattle and horses and other animals, the USDA is shutting down horse slaughter transports to Mexico. That's 80% of the 25,000 American horses slaughtered. We don't know what the time frame is, but we are demanding that the USDA and the Trump administration make that permanent. We must end American horses being slaughtered for human consumption to sell the meat to Japan and a handful of other countries. These horses don't deserve this fate.
All right. I want to ask you about the Buchanan-Carter Amendment and news here as well.
Steve, you know, and you've been very active on this issue as well, to combat staged animal fighting. It's a despicable activity. You know, you think of Michael Vick and dog fighting, and you think of, you know, cockfighting with blades attached to the bird's legs. This is illegal. It's the most widely and severely criminalized form of animal exploitation, animal fighting is. But we still have incredible numbers of dogs that are victimized in fighting and millions of birds victimized in fighting as well. So in the U.S. House of Representatives, just very, very recently, we worked with a Republican from Florida, Vern Buchanan, and a Democrat from Louisiana, Troy Carter, and they passed an amendment, you know, with us pushing and lobbying for it, to have an additional dedicated $2 million to have more USDA law enforcement crack down on dogfighting and cockfighting. So we need to get that passed in the Senate. But this will be a new core of federal agents to stop this practice, and I'm very excited about it.
Indeed. So I thought that dogfighting is already a felony. Is it that we can't catch the bad guys?
That's 100%. We've got great laws, fabulous laws, but we just don't have the enforcement. We don't have the policing and the prosecutors. These are organized criminals. These are people who are doing their best to evade prosecution. They have clandestine networks. They do this in remote areas. And we must do better at fighting it. We need personnel. We need law enforcement personnel. We need to understand that it's not just the animals, that these are organized criminals who are involved in illegal gambling, money laundering, narcotics traffic, violence against people. Anyone who's willing to violate the laws against animal fighting is not going to be, you know, a candidate for obeying all the other laws in our society. When we see animal fighting events, we see cluster crimes. We see all sorts of crimes bound together.
Yeah, I've talked to law enforcement people who have been at these activities. And yes, every time, even if for some reason they are quick enough to hide the dogs or somehow say, there was no dog fighting here, what they always, always find are other activities that they, I mean, they're wanted criminals very often that are involved in all of this, Wayne.
Yes, they are hardened criminals in so many cases. And if you're willing to do this to a dog or to a rooster and attach knives to their legs? Are you going to be respectful of the rest of the laws of the United States of America? No. It's never a case where they just commit those animal violence crimes. They're committing other crimes every single minute when they're at that event.
Now, I'm reporting less on dog fighting, maybe not cockfighting, but on dog fighting. Is it that they've gone underground better? You'd figure with social media, it exposes everybody doing anything, but maybe not.
We literally just don't have the full attention of our federal law enforcement agents. County sheriffs, local police are doing better and better. And we're working with them all over the country to interdict these dogfights and cockfights. But the feds, they've been terribly weak. And what we're trying to do at Animal Wellness, we need more. We've got the funding amendment from Vern Buchanan and Troy Carter that we just got done. We have a new bill called the Animal Cruelty Enforcement Act to have a special prosecutor's unit that focuses on animal cruelty at the Department of Justice. That's what we need to stop this. We're not just going to, you know, have these hardened criminals go away because we say it's illegal. We have to enforce the law in very practical ways.
Okay, so we enforce the law. Then what do the judges do? That's the next step. Are they really applying to the full extent of the law, the having someone pay the price, quite literally in some cases, for doing these things?
Very infrequently do they ever get a maximum penalty. They typically get a lower end penalty, and you know, sometimes that results in the people saying, "Oh, that's the price of doing business, and I'm going to resume." And that's why we insist on felony level penalties, high fines, seizure of property used in the commission of the crime. All of those together will result in deterrence, which is ultimately what we need to achieve.
You know, I never have enough time to speak with you. Wayne Pacelli, CEO, President, Founder, Animal Wellness Action, Center for a Humane Economy. Once again, I encourage you to check out the newsletter if any of this is of interest to you. The website again, Wayne.
AnimalWellnessAction.org and CenterForAHumaneEconomy.org. And Steve, thank you so much for having me on.
It is always a pleasure. What a pro you are. Thank you, Wayne. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Well, a belated happy 4th of July to all of you. And I've talked about, leading up to the 4th, what you can do to help your dog or your cat who is fearful of fireworks. The problem is, and I have two emails about this, saying my dog is still petrified, even though, for the most part, the fireworks have gone away. Could my dog be suffering from PTSD? And the answer to that is kind of yes, kind of, actually. So we now know that dogs can suffer, and we assume cats as well, incidentally, from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome. Now, if, for example, let me try to explain this. If you're walking down the street and a loud, sudden noise, let's say gunshots happen, God forbid, gunshots happen. And then you're walking down the street, it happens again and again and again. And there's no predictability as to when it will happen. You will likely be a good candidate for suffering PTSD to similar loud sounds. And that's kind of what's happening to your dogs here, both of you who emailed me this question. Now, how permanent is this? Hopefully not so much. So as long as the fireworks go away, eventually the dogs, in both cases, should be back to quote-unquote normal. But what is normal for these dogs? So if normal for these dogs is still a somewhat anxious state, then I have a different answer for you. And let me explain what I mean by that. We know that most dogs, or at least a good percent, that suffer from one anxiety suffer from another. So dogs that are afraid of car rides are more likely to be predisposed to be afraid of being left alone, separation anxiety. Those dogs may be more predisposed to be afraid of veterinary visits. Those dogs may be more predisposed to have thunderstorm anxiety or fear of loud sounds like fireworks. So for those dogs, right now you've got a dog that is really afraid, looking over his or her shoulder as if fireworks are about to happen any time. That's what's going on, right? But if they are anxious about other things, it really is a problem that needs to be addressed. And talking to your veterinarian about that anxiety and the choices, which can range depending on the anxiety your dog has, and what works for one dog isn't absolutely guaranteed to work for another dog or cat, but include pheromone products to pharmaceutical products, depending on what's going on. But if it persists, do talk to your veterinarian. In Illinois, no dogs, no cats can be sold at pet stores. Boy, a lot of us, me included, worked very hard to get that law passed, and similar law in Chicago. But now, unbelievably, dogs and cats are being sold at pet stores. How can that happen? Mark Ayers will be here to talk about that. Mark is the Illinois director of the Humane World for Animals, formerly Humane Society of the United States, who also worked very, very hard to get this done. What is the loophole in all of this? He will explain how they're trying to tie that loophole so dogs and cats cannot be sold at pet stores. We'll also talk about why dogs and cats should not be sold at pet stores. Also with the author of a book called A Dog Named 647, Dr. Nancy Kay. That's next week on Steve Dale's Pet World here on WGN.